You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm Jocelyn Swigger, and I'm trying to learn all the Chopin etudes. I'm also trying to balance hanging out with my toddler, teaching full-time, and life's other distractions. This is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's Saturday, March 3rd, and let me start with some playing, and then I'll talk to you about my week. Here is the Thirds Etude, Opus 25, number 6. So that's still pretty sloppy, but I think I'm going to put it on the shelf for a while. It feels like it's reached a bit of a plateau. And since I have so many other of these etudes that I haven't even started thinking about the notes at all or anything about how to sort of negotiate them, I think I need to put it on the back burner, and I'll take it out again when I'm getting closer to having a lesson, which is going to be, looks like, at the end of May, by the way. Anyway, I had a really weird practice week. It was so strange. So I'm actually going to take you through it day by day because it was just so odd. So Sunday, I had a student play the Grieg Concerto with orchestra at my school, and that was really thrilling. It was the first time a student of mine has won the concerto competition, which has only been in existence a few years. And she did a terrific job, and it was just really inspiring and exciting to see her, and I was so proud and so happy, and it was just terrific. And on Monday, I had this really the best practice session I've had in a while. I was thinking a lot about performing. And of course, I'm going to be playing Rhapsody in Blue in a couple of, well, month and a half. And so I was thinking about really being on stage and about all of the energy that I want to project and about taking nervous energy and turning it into really exciting performance and all of this kind of stuff I've been thinking about. And I just had this wonderful, open feeling, exciting flow state practice where I was really practicing performing. And it just was terrific. I loved it. It was great. And then Tuesday, I just didn't get to practice very much because Tuesday is a day where I teach, and then sort of fall into the ground and hang out with my toddler in the evening. And I just didn't get to practice on Tuesday particularly at all. And then Wednesday was a really, really tough day because it was leap day. And a very dear friend of mine who was born on leap day died about 12 years ago. And so it's always rough when his birthday comes around, more so because it's really only every 4 years, so you don't kind of get inured to it the way you do if it's an anniversary that's every year. But he would have been 40. And so that combined with it being just a horrendous, torrential, rainy, awful, gloomy day, it was just really the hardest day I've had in a while. And I cried a lot and was miserable and felt achy and like lots of sort of bad feelings, of course, but tension in my body. And I felt when I had to stop and stretch a lot when I was practicing, and it was just awful. So then Thursday, of course, I was also a little bit sad that I had undone, or not undone, but just not been able to kind of keep going with my wonderful practice day for Monday. But on Thursday, sort of a high and a low at the same time, I had my first Rhapsody in Blue. I don't mean to talk so much about Rhapsody in Blue, but that's just kind of what happened this week. I had my first Rhapsody in Blue rehearsal with the conductor I'm going to be playing with. And that was great because it was really exciting to work with him. But it also made me realize that my entrances aren't nearly as secure as I thought they were. Partly because it, you know, it's a rhapsody. It's not in sonata form or in a simple ABA kind of form that you could follow. And so if, you know, you can't go, okay, well, I finished in E flat, so obviously I'm going to be in B flat the next time. Instead, it's just, well, that was in E flat and here we are in A. Like, you just don't really know. You have to, or rather, you have to really know. You can't sort of rely on a map as much, or you just sort of have to find, anyway, you know what I mean? You have to kind of find your way around. And so that was a bit of a wake up call that was good, but also exciting. And then Friday, I tried to recapture my wonderful practice from Monday and couldn't quite. But then I ended up stumbling onto a breakthrough I'm kind of excited about, which I'll tell you about in a minute. And then here it is Saturday, and I barely practiced. I spent all day hanging out with my toddler, and that was awesome. But now it's the evening, and it's time to practice and do my podcast. And here's how it is, you know? You deal with life the way it comes at you. Anyway, here's my breakthrough that I had. I was thinking about 10 number 2, which I haven't been working on at all. This is this one. So I'm going to talk to you about this a little bit slower. Anyway, this is one that I worked on a while ago, and I worked on it in high school and then worked on it a while ago during this project. And then I put it away because I just could not figure out how to play this thing without feeling like my fingers were going to break off. Let me sort of walk you through what's going on here. Basically, in the right hand, you play a chord, and then usually with your pinky and the fingers kind of next to it, like your ring finger and your third finger, you then play little fast notes, and then you do another chord. And then these are the weakest fingers, right? Little fast notes, chord, little fast notes, chord, little fast notes, chord, right? So it's chord, three notes, chord, three notes. Okay, hear the pattern? So I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about something that Evelyn Broncar, who was my piano teacher in high school, said about this. And she said the hardest thing about this etude is that it comes right after the first etude, which is this one. Okay, well, I haven't practiced that one in a while, so that should theoretically have some right notes in it. But anyway, you can hear then that one, it's these big chords. Oops. So she said the hardest thing about this one is that it comes right after the one where your hands have to be so open, and then you have to close your hand to play 10 number 2. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, how could that have been the hardest thing for her about this piece when there's so much else about it to be hard? You know, to have it, oh, the hardest thing about it is that it comes after this other one. And then I thought, wait a minute. Let me think about that part about closing your hand. So here, this may not work for everybody, but for me with hands my size, I really think this is going to be the key. So basically what I had been doing is playing the chord. So this is with my thumb on this note and my pinky on this note. And then I wouldn't actually be holding down the note, but I would be holding my thumb in the place where the low note is. So I'm going to hold the note down instead of just having my thumb in the air over it. So I was basically playing it like this. Right? So it plays a chord, and then I kind of stretch the hand open, and then I would jump to the next place, and I'm going to hold down the thumb again because I would normally be holding it in place, and stretch the hand open. Do you see where I'm going with this? So I was putting in all of these little stretches, which probably for somebody with a bigger hand might not be a stretch at all, but for me, it is a little bit. And I thought, well, what happens if I actually close my hand in those moments? So what I'm doing now is, and I say what I'm doing now, I figured this out yesterday and I haven't really practiced yet, but what I'm gonna do, this is my big plan, is play the first chord and then snap my hand closed. And of course, this is a bit of an exaggeration, but just so you, if you want to sort of feel it as you're listening. So if you have your hand open in the size of the chord, And then you snap your hand closed so that your fingers are almost touching each other, like if you were going to turn a key in the lock, is kind of the perfect way to think about it. Because if you think about turning a key in the lock, which is going to be, of course, this big, nice motion that your wrist does very easily and normally, and you don't really think about it being tense or anything like that. If I have my hand right here, then going to these notes feels much freer and easier. And then I stretch out again, and it's not really a stretch because this chord actually works very nicely. It was just getting up to here that was turning into a stretch. So basically what I'm doing is open, close. Really quickly, open, close. Open, close. Open, not very much, but close. Open, 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 close. So I think this is going to work. I need to practice it, obviously. But that was kind of exciting. So I think maybe I have, and let me just make this into a pun, I think I've unlocked the secret to 10 number 2 because of my little key in the lock thing here. So I'll report back to you on whether that actually works as well as I think it will next week. I'm going to put 10 number 2 definitely back in the sort of front burner of this thing. And I'm going to take, as I said, I'm going to take the thirds out because I don't feel like it's going anywhere right now. So 10 number 2 is back in business. I also am working on 25 number 4, which is of course this one. And I've had a couple of pretty good practice sessions on this where I've been thinking about things like doing a bar at a time. I didn't play the right notes there, but you know what I mean. Or where I've been doing things like, and I've been doing quite a bit of this, or I haven't done this from memory, but so where I'm just doing the chucks and not the booms. And then when you put it all together, it supposedly works. Ugh, I haven't practiced this today, as you can hear. Anyway, I keep saying, I know I've been saying for like 3 weeks that I'm going to actually pay more attention to this and really get it sounding like something. And I really am. And I have actually been practicing it. I'm not just kind of reading through it in this haphazard way like I was before. But I don't have a whole lot to show for you yet. But hopefully I will next week. I have been thinking about these places where the top notes on the right hand make this nice long line. So hopefully I'll be able to do that for you next week. One issue I am going to have to deal with this in this piece is I'm going to have to decide about the tempo because there's two sort of canonized, standardized tempos for it. One is 120, which is in the Mikuli edition and was also in the French first edition. And one is 160, which according to Paul Badura Skoda, is the, I think in the autograph, although he doesn't actually say really clearly it's an autograph, but his book mostly comes from the autograph. So between 160 and 120 is a really, really, really big difference. I think what I'm going to do for now is work this thing up to 120 and then, and maybe do a little bit of research on, I especially want to listen to some recordings and see what people do. I suspect it's going to be somewhere in between, and I suspect that there's going to be a pretty wide range of what people do. I don't have my phone on, but so for my metronome, but 120 is about here, which takes a little bit, but is not, you know, impossible. And 160 is, I'm sort of making this up, but is about, so you can hear it's really different. And of course, much harder at the faster. So I'm going to have to think about that a little bit, but I think for now I'm going to go ahead and be with the lower tempo just to not kill myself, because honestly, I have enough to do. Okay, so then the other two that I'm going to look at are, I am going to keep reading 10 number 8, you know, this one. And I know I've been reading this for weeks and I don't really have anything to report about it. I just feel like spending 5 minutes a day on it and getting familiar with the harmonies of it is where it needs to stay for now. So I'm not ready to kind of move it up in my assembly line conveyor belt of pieces I'm working on. But I did want to start adding the cello etude because I have a student working on it, and I feel like I need to be able to answer her questions. So the cello etude, I'm going to play you just the first couple measures because it's so beautiful, is this one. You can see why it's called the cello etude. It's this beautiful nocturne. It goes on, and then there's a couple of big cadenzas that are going to take a little bit of work. I don't think it's going to be that terrible to learn. Of course, I've said that before about some of these etudes, but I think it's mostly going to be just a matter of figuring out what the notes are in the cadenzas, and I think it'll be fine. But it's beautiful, so that should be a really nice break, I think, especially after all of these millions of notes that I've been working on. So that's going to be what I'm going to work on this week. I am practicing Rhapsody in Blue. I'm also going to be starting to practice Appalachian Spring, because I'm going to be doing that with some colleagues in, I guess, April as well, which will be fun because I love that piece. So I'm not going to play those for you, but just to let you know that those are the other two kind of big pieces that are in my life, as along with these etudes. And it's nice to have pieces that aren't the etudes in my life. I think that's actually pretty healthy. So that's what I'm working on. I wanted to ask you a favor. I made a Facebook page for Play It Again Swig last week, and so far I am the only one who likes it. Now, maybe it's just true that I'm the only one who likes it, but it's also possible that I did not make the page correctly, or thought I published it and didn't, or it doesn't actually exist. But if you like this podcast, would you please go over to the Facebook Play It Again Swig page and like it? That would really make me feel swell if you would do that. And if you try and it doesn't exist, please let me know, and then I'll try and deal with the problem. But if you could like my page, that would be awfully, awfully nice. So that's it. You can follow me on Twitter at Jocelyn Swigger. You can like my Facebook page at Play It Again Swig on Facebook. You can find out more about this project at playitagainswig.com. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy. Yeah.